Chapter 10. That was an order the Valhallans were eager to respond to, and they did so with alacrity, opening fire on the greenskins while they were still caught in the open. We took them by complete surprise, the first couple falling under a hail of lasfire before they even had a chance to react. The others were quick, though, assessing the situation with remarkable acuity for such imbecilic creatures, and scattering again to make themselves more difficult targets.
1. Though brutal and primitive by the standards of other races, orcs have an instinctive understanding of combat second to none.
A couple of them went to ground behind a tangle of rocks and began to shoot back at us. Fortunately, their marksmanship was no better than usual, so they inflicted no casualties. But they managed to come close enough to make us take full advantage of our own cover, their bolts bursting uncomfortably close to our position. Something stung my cheek, and I wiped away a smear of blood where a chip of stone had caught me. That was too near for comfort, and I retreated further into the darkness of the cave, bracing my las pistol against a convenient outcrop of rock to improve the accuracy of my retaliation. Seeing that we were effectively suppressed, the four remaining in the open ran forwards, brandishing their blades and screaming at the top of their voices in the way that they do. As they closed with us, they fired their hand weapons sporadically, without even bothering to aim, which made a lot of noise but had little practical effect, other than making even more sure that we kept our heads down.
"Lant!" I yelled. "Take the ones in the rocks! Commissar!"
His acknowledgement was crisp as he raised the barrel of his flamer cautiously over the outcrop he was sheltering behind. I directed a flurry of las bolts at the snipers, if the perpetrators of such inaccurate shooting could be dignified with such a term, and to my relief, Hale and Simla followed my lead. Griffin and Margot concentrated their fire on the charging orcs in front of us, slowing them momentarily as the big orc in front, with the horns on his helmet, took a las bolt to the knee.
1. Horned helmets. A common symbol of authority among the greenskins, apparently meant to prove that they've overcome something even bigger and nastier than they are.
He stumbled, falling face down in the snow, and a couple of his subordinates tripped over him. For a moment, the hail of incoming fire dwindled as the fallen greenskins flailed at one another, exchanging guttural profanities and blows which would have stunned a grox before floundering to their feet again. The delay was enough for Lunt, however. He rose to his full height and directed a searing jet of burning promethium at the tangle of rocks which concealed the shooters. With a roar which sounded more like rage than pain, the two orcs burst out into the open, like living torches, charging towards our position. Four lasguns spat as one, targeting as they moved, and the trailing one fell, but the one in front just kept coming, wreathed in steam from the snow which evaporated about him, charred bone becoming visible through the sizzling flesh. "Emperor's guts!" Lunt swung the barrel, trying to line up another shot, then fell back, an expression of pained surprise on his face as a bloody crater exploded in his chest. I swung my gaze back to the main group of orcs, who were now on their feet again, their crude weapons kicking up a flurry of snow and debris around the fallen heavy weapons trooper. Typically for their kind, they concentrated only on the most visible threat, ignoring the rest of us for the moment. A fatal mistake.
"Jürgen!"
I ordered, gesturing to the group which was now close enough to be a target for the melter. Smiling grimly, my aide took careful aim, sighting directly at the limping leader, who was still snarling in triumph at the death of our fellow trooper. I'd seen enough bolter wounds in my time to know that such a hit would have been instantly fatal, smashing through the flak armour beneath his greatcoat to detonate inside his ribcage. There was nothing to be done for Lunt now other than avenge his demise. The heavy weapon hissed once more, flashing the intervening curtain of snow into vapour and reducing the orc leader and the two standing next to him to a rank pile of gently steaming offal. The sole survivor turned, blinking in what looked like stunned stupefaction, its left arm hanging limp and charred from flash burns, then turned and bolted. Which just goes to show that at least a few of them aren't as stupid as they look. I rose fully to my feet and took careful aim, bracing the las pistol in my hand across my left forearm as though I were on the firing range, and trying to still the trembling which seemed to have taken control of my body. Whether it was a delayed reaction to the terror the sight of the Necrons had inspired in me, anger at Lunt's sudden and brutal death, or simply my abused body starting to respond to the relative rise in temperature, I couldn't say. But I was grimly determined to slay the foul creature myself in spite of it. I squeezed the trigger, thankful for the steadiness my augmetic fingers imparted to my aim, and was rewarded with a gout of ichor from between the greenskin's shoulder blades. Griffin and Margot joined in as it stumbled, bellowing in pain, and between us, we dispatched it like the beast it was. It was only as I stood there, exhaling slowly as the tension eased from my aching body and the trembling gradually came under control, that I noticed the burning orc was still stumbling towards us, its steps faltering now as it staggered drunkenly to the left and the right, but still forging forward, fixated on reaching its tormentors. It was a ghastly sight to behold, I must admit, and I was on the verge of ordering the troopers to finish it off when it dropped abruptly to the ground in a gout of steam from the melting snow around it, and at last lay still. Silence descended, save for the relentless keening of the wind and the rasping of my breath in my throat.
Lunt?
Griffin asked, the flatness of her tone already answering her own question.
Dead,
Hale confirmed, standing over his broken body, the spilled blood and viscera already glazed with ice. I forced myself to join her, looking down at the dead trooper, feeling I knew not what, other than my usual sense of profound relief that it wasn't me lying there, as it so easily could have been, of course.
He did his duty, I said,
the highest praise I could think of, and everyone nodded soberly. Griffin gestured to Hale and Simla.
Bring him, she said. We'll take turns.
I shook my head, conscious of how she must feel, losing a trooper under her command for the first time. It never gets easy, I can tell you that. But after a while, you learn to accept it. Despite what they say, the Emperor can't protect everyone, which is why I take such good care to do the job myself.
I wish we could, I said,
as gently as I could manage. But we don't have the time. We have to get back as fast as possible. I half expected her to argue, but she nodded reluctantly.
We'll come back for him later, then, she said.
I shook my head again. I'm afraid we can't, I said, explaining as tactfully as I could. I was suddenly aware of four pairs of eyes boring into me. Jürgen, of course, would simply go along with whatever I said without argument, his dogged and unimaginative deference to authority being foremost among his well-hidden virtues. Why not? She wasn't challenging my decision, I was pleased to note, just asking for an explanation, which I suppose they were all entitled to. We can't leave any trace of our presence here, I pointed out. Right now, the Necrons are only aware of the Greenskins. At least I hope they were. Our best hope of making it back to warn the others is by sneaking past while they concentrate on the threat they know about.
The Orcs,
Griffin nodded in reluctant understanding. But if they find Lunt's body, they'll come after us too.
I see.
I'm sorry, I said again. But it's the only way. I motioned Jürgen forwards, and he readied the melter. I briefly considered trying to salvage the flamer, but it would be more trouble than it was worth. The tanks were too bulky for anyone to add to their kit, and the firing mechanism looked damaged by bolter fire anyway. I checked Lunt's pockets for any personal effects which his family back on Valhalla might want, if he actually had any. I had no idea, really. Just taking comfort in the familiar routine, and collected his las pistol as an afterthought, giving it to Jürgen to carry. We might as well get the benefit of something less dangerous to the rest of us in case we found ourselves in close-quarter combat again. Then I nodded to my aide, stepped back, and he pulled the trigger. Lunt's body boiled into vapour in a matter of seconds, helped by the volatile promethium left in the flamer tanks, and I led the others in a few ritual words commending his soul to the Emperor. We were a somber group as we turned away. You can be sure of that. The drifting snow already beginning to obscure the scar in the rock where the heat of the melter had sent our comrade to join His Majesty. Sometimes when I sit in my study here at the Scholar and watch the flames in the grate through a glass of Amasek, I can't help thinking of all the brave men and women I've seen fall on a battlefield somewhere without even a grave marker left behind to show they were ever there, and reflect that I'm probably the last man alive who even remembers they existed, and that when I'm gone, the last trace of them will fade with me. Then I thank the Emperor that I've lasted as long as I have, and that I've seen my last war, and I might just defy the odds long enough to die in bed after all. Someone else's, with any luck.
1. Ironically, this part of the archive appears to have been composed only a matter of months before the 13th Black Crusade engulfed most of the segmentum and Cain found himself dragged out of retirement despite his advancing years.
We paused in the mouth of the cave, and Griffin started to take a quick inventory of our remaining stock of explosives. "There's no time for that now," I said, urging our party on without, I hoped, too obvious a show of impatience. "Every minute counts." "Right." She fell into step beside me. "And there's no point in tipping off the tinheads, is there?" "Exactly," I said. "Not only would collapsing the passage alert the next Necron patrol to our presence, it would close them off from the orcs. The last thing I wanted to do was redirect their attention to the rest of the tunnel complex. Of course, they could have found their way into the mines by now in any case, but I was betting that once they'd discovered an exit and an enemy waiting beyond it, they'd ignore everything else until they'd exterminated the greenies, or at least as many of them as they could find in the vicinity. I explained this to Griffin, and she nodded. "Makes sense to me," she said. "What I don't understand," Jürgen said slowly, "is how they got out of the tomb in the first place." Well, that had been worrying me too. I thought we'd brought down enough of the roof to keep them penned in for a great deal longer than this, but they had access to techno-sorceries which made the Tau look like Stone Age barbarians, so it never paid to underestimate them. "We'll find out soon enough," I said, apprehension setting across me like a shroud. Normally, I would have been profoundly relieved to have returned to the tunnels where I felt reasonably at home, but the knowledge that there were Necrons abroad, possibly even sweeping the same narrow passageways we were so cautiously navigating, knotted my stomach with fear. I would have preferred to move on in the dark, relying on the eerie green glow given off by their Gauss weapons to warn us of their presence, but none of the others had the advantage of my Hiver's tunnel sense. They'd have been stumbling blindly in the darkness and making more noise than a Groxinus ceramics emporium to boot. So we moved at the double, the easy lopping stride of the veteran trooper which eats up the kilometres without dragging you down with exhaustion, our luminator beams reflecting just as brightly from the frozen walls as before. "There's something up ahead," Simla said, a couple of kilometres later, taking his turn on point. My palms tingled with dread anticipation as the formation slowed, weapons coming to bear down the tunnel. "What is it?" I asked. "I don't know." His voice on the combead sounded puzzled rather than alarmed. "There's a lot of blood." Well, that was something at least. If it bled, it wasn't a Necron. We closed up into a tighter formation, moving ahead a couple of hundred metres to join him as he walked cautiously forward, his luminator playing on what looked like a large pile of butchered meat. The ice around it was crimson, slick with frozen blood, as he'd said. Absently, I realised there was too much there for the body to be human. Then, as we got closer, the full size of it became apparent. "It's an Amble," Hale said, surprise suffusing her voice. "Not anymore," Margot added helpfully. "Where did it come from?" Jürgen asked, as ever displaying his talent for the obvious question. Griffin shrugged. "Cogboy must have got his head count wrong." That much was clear, of course. I was more concerned with how it had died. I moved closer to examine the cadaver, and almost immediately wished I hadn't. Beneath its glaze of ice, raw, bloody wounds slashed across its body. Whatever killed it had done so in close combat, wielding razor-sharp blades with surgical precision. "Where's its hide?" Simla wondered aloud. Griffin shrugged. "Do Necrons use hearthrugs?" "Not that I ever noticed," I said, getting everyone moving again. Something about the dead animal spooked me. I don't mind admitting it. The Necrons I'd seen before had killed efficiently and dispassionately. But this mutilated carcass spoke of a refined and gleeful sadism of the kind I associated with the Eldar renegades, who prey upon their own kind with as much abandon as they do upon humanity.
One, if not more so, the Eldar Corsairs appear to be touched by the dark powers in some way, and the enmity between them and their untainted kin seems to run as deep as that between the loyal subjects of His Divine Majesty and the traitors who seek to subjugate humanity in the name of their blasphemous gods.
As we left the grisly trophy behind us, all trace of it soon swallowed by the suffocating darkness which closed in around the tiny refuge of light cast by illuminators, my apprehension grew even greater. Every step we took was taking us closer to that hidden tomb, and whatever horrors it might conceal. I had a better idea than most after my experiences in the depths of their catacombs, so you'll have to forgive me if I confess that taking those steps became progressively harder as I had to exert every iota of willpower I possessed not to turn and flee, screaming towards the daylight. At length, a fatalistic numbness settled over me. Retreat was clearly impossible in any case, as the orcish armies would kill us just as surely as the Necrons if we tried to go back the way we'd come, and our only hope of safety lay in returning to the refinery complex and the protection it afforded. Meagre as that looked right now, caught between a gargant and who knew what terrors from the dawn of time. My sense of direction, reliable as always, was telling me we would be almost on top of the entrance we'd found by now, and I urged my companions to even greater caution. To my relief, they needed little urging. The oppressiveness of the tunnels and the knowledge of what awaited us no doubt weighing on their minds as heavily as it did upon my own. I'd kept my las pistol in my right hand ever since the firefight with the orcs, and I reached across with my left to loosen my trusty chainsword in its scabbard. Like the pistol, I'd carried it for more years than I cared to remember, so long that it had ceased to exist in my mind as a weapon or even an object in its own right. Now, when I drew it, the humming blade was simply an extension of my own body.
1. I can attest from my personal association with him that Kane was one of the most accomplished swordsmen in the sector, if not the entire segmentum. Even well into his retirement and his second century, none of the combat instructors at the Scholar were able to match his skill, honed as it was by innumerable victories in the field. Much to their chagrin, I might add. Oddly, his memoirs give little detail about the actual techniques he employed in the melees he describes, probably because his fighting style was so instinctive he never bothered to analyze it.
Knowing it was there was curiously reassuring, and I breathed a little easier as we rounded the last bend in the tunnel before the roof fall we'd caused. We doused all the lights except Simla's, allowing our eyes to get a little more used to the gloom and covering him from the concealing darkness as he advanced. And at first all seemed well. The tumbled heap of rock, stone and ice lay across the tunnel, narrowing it to half its width, as I remembered. The palms of my hands were tingling, though. Usually a reliable indicator that something my conscious mind hasn't picked up on yet isn't quite right. So I slowed my pace, scanning the pile of debris in the light from Simla's luminator, and waited for my tunnel rat's instincts to provide the missing clue. The rubble seemed undisturbed, however hard I stared at it, so it couldn't be that. My gaze flickered across a deep patch of shadow a few metres from it, and then onto the dimly seen texture of the tunnel wall, where the light of our luminators bounced back in the sparkling reflections we'd grown so used to by now, they scarcely registered. Simla, tunnel wall, about 5 metres from the cave-in. I directed, and waited for our point man to swing his luminator round.
Emperor's bowels!
Griffin brought up her lasgun, her shocked exclamation putting all our reactions into words. The shadow was no such thing, of course. The texture of the tunnel wall should have been visible there too, as my subconscious had been trying to tell me. A fresh passageway was now gouged out of the rock, leading off Emperor knew where. The work, presumably, of our butchered amble. Claw marks, Simla confirmed, shining the beam of his luminator around the mouth and then into the depths of the new tunnel. His posture altered suddenly, the las gun the luminator was taped to coming up into the firing position. Golden throne! We ran forward to join him, anticipating Emperor knew what, and clustered at the tunnel mouth. At first it seemed no different from the other amble runs we'd seen travelling through. Then I followed the beam of light, saw what was illuminated by it, and swallowed hard.
Orcs, Jürgen said, as phlegmatically as if he were handing me a fresh bowl of tanner leaf tea.
You think? Margot chipped in with grisly relish. Kind of hard to tell without their skins. There were 6 of them in total, all dead, all flayed the way the amble had been. Beneath their thin glazing of ice, they looked for all the world like anatomical models, laid out for the instruction of apprentice medicae, if the greenskins ever bothered with such niceties as chirurgery, of course.
1. Actually, they do, although not in any fashion we would recognize as good medical practice.
What killed them? Hale asked, paling as much as she was able to. At that point, I was past caring, to be honest. Their presence here was a strong indication that at least one group had made it into the tunnels ahead of us, and that an indeterminate number of the brutes might even now be wreaking havoc beyond our defensive lines, not to mention standing between us and safety. All I knew was that the Necrons must somehow be responsible, and that whatever tomb-spawned horror had killed them like this was something I didn't want to meet. With a premonitory tingle, I realized that the new tunnel was running almost parallel to the Necron one we'd blocked, and suddenly felt a violent urge to be somewhere else as quickly as possible. "Look at this, sir." Jürgen held up one of the crude bolters the orcs had carried, an expression of mild curiosity on his face. It had been sheared clean through, the metal bright where a blade of unimaginable sharpness had sliced it in two, along with the hand that had held it if the amount of blood frozen to the stock was anything to go by. Automatically, I scanned the scattered equipment around the bodies, looking for some kind of clue as to what their purpose had been. It was hard to be sure, but something about the weapons they carried and the few pieces of rag which hadn't been stained with blood reminded me of the scouts who'd shot down our shuttle. That was a logical inference, of course, but quite disturbing in its way. It meant we could be up against orcs who, untypically for their kind, were skilled at moving quietly and waiting in ambush rather than announcing their presence with loud voices and indiscriminate weapons fire. "Shouldn't we see what's at the end of the tunnel?" Griffin asked, reluctance audible in her voice. I shook my head. "No." It took all the self-control I could muster to sound calm and collected, instead of screaming the word. "Nothing's more important than reporting back what we've found. Besides," Margot chipped in, indicating the mutilated orcs with a casual wave, "that looks like a pretty definite keep-out sign to me." "Then let's take the hint," I said. Griffin nodded. "You'll get no argument from me." "Hold it." Hale had moved back to the main tunnel and was now guarding our rear, standing next to the rockfall which had buried the entrance to the tomb. And which, thanks to our stray amble, had turned out to be a complete waste of time. "I think I can hear something." "Can you be a little more specific?" I asked, lowering my voice instinctively, even though no one else would hear it through the combead in her ear. "Movement. Beyond the rock slide." Her voice was equally hushed. Simla scuttled forward to support her, dousing our last remaining luminator and plunging us into darkness. I've never been prone to claustrophobia, a consequence of my upbringing, I suppose, but at that moment the weight of the gloom around us seemed crushing. I found myself obscurely grateful for Jürgen's familiar odour, which reassured me that I had at least one ally down here I could trust, and drew my chainsword from its scabbard. I strained my ears, listening for any change in the ambient noises around me, tuning out the sounds of my own breathing and my hammering heart. At first I heard nothing except the susurration of the lungs of my companions and the faint rustling of their clothes as they moved into positions of readiness. Then it came to me, rising up out of the echoes, the sound of boots crunching on hoarfrost and guttural voices whispering in Orcish. "Let them get close," I sub-vocalized, hearing the reassuring murmur of response from the rest of the team, and hunkering down to present the smallest possible target. "Take them when they come around the rock slide." It was a good strategy, and probably would have worked, except for my companion's inexperience of tunnel fighting and moving stealthily in the dark. I never knew if Hale or Simla was to blame, but as they settled into the shelter of the tumbled heap of rubble, one of them dislodged a small piece of debris. I held my breath as it skittered away across the ice, and the advancing footsteps halted. A loud sniffing sound echoed through the dark, followed by a muttered conversation in what, for greenskins, were hushed tones. I picked out the word, "Homies," which I'd heard often enough before to be sure of, and knew that our ambush had been discovered.
1. Humies. The closest the orcish larynx can come to the Gothic word, humans.
A glimmer of orange light was now visible behind the rock slide, flickering like fire, and a sick presentiment gripped me. One of the approaching greenskins apparently had a flamer, the pilot light providing illumination for the group as well as heavy support, and a vivid mental image of the immolated orcs Lunt had killed rose up unbidden in my mind. I determined to make the bearer my highest priority target. Of all the ways to die I'd seen on the battlefields of the galaxy, burning to death looked among the least pleasant. "Stay back," I sub-vocalized, probably unnecessarily, as I'm sure the others were all thinking the same. Then I levelled my las pistol at the constriction in the passageway where the greenskins must surely appear, and waited. To my surprise, however, They didn't charge blindly forward into combat, as I'd expected. A couple of small objects flew through the gap, bouncing on the frost-covered floor, and skittered wildly in random directions.
"Grenade!"
Simler yelled just before they detonated, and a storm of shrapnel ripped through the air. He fell backwards, ugly wounds peppering his body. Even the flak armor beneath his greatcoat couldn't stop all of the shards, and crimson stains began seeping across it as he tried to get to his feet. Hale was luckier, her partner taking most of the blast, but I could see her left arm was bleeding heavily and hung limply at her side. She leapt forward into the gap, screaming in anger, and fired her lasgun one-handed on full auto at the no-doubt surprised greenskins beyond. She must have hit at least one, too, judging by the howls of rage and pain which echoed around the confined space.
"Hale, get back!"
Griffin shouted, but she was too late. A volley of bolts tore Hale apart in a rain of blood and viscera, and then the orcs were among us. Simler tried to raise his lasgun as the first bounded through the narrow opening, but before he could pull the trigger, a massive cleaver swung down to bisect his skull. The greenskin bellowed in triumph, but it was short-lived as Margot and I shot it almost simultaneously, and it dropped, most of its head blown away. Griffin kept up a steady suppressive fire against the opening through which they had to come, attempting to dissuade any more from following, but it was a futile hope. When the blood of an orc is up, they have almost no sense of self-preservation, seeming happy to die if they can take a few of their enemies with them. Another greenskin dived through the choke point, spitting bolts from the crude pistol in his hand, and to my horror, the flickering glow of the incendiary weapon was growing brighter, indicating that its operator would be the next to emerge.
"Jürgen!" I shouted, pointing. "Take out the flamer!"
He nodded and sighted the melter carefully. I had no more time to consider his actions after that, or anyone else's for that matter, because the greenskin was upon me, swinging its heavy blade at my head. I ducked, bringing up the screaming chainsword to block it instinctively, and felt the sturdy mechanism shudder as adamantium teeth met crudely forged metal. Sparks flew, miniature orange suns melting tiny craters in the ice which coated the floor, before I turned my body, deflecting the brute's headlong charge into the wall. It roared as its head impacted with the unyielding ice-coated stone and turned back towards me, thick ropes of drool hanging from its tusks. Now it was really hacked off. Good. I cut at its leg, slashing a wound that would have disabled a human, but which seemed to affect it little more than a scratch. I brought its cumbersome blade down to block the strike, as I'd anticipated, and I slashed upwards, taking the loathsome creature in the neck. It looked startled for a moment, as if wondering where all the blood was suddenly coming from, and dropped heavily to its knees. With any other species, this would have been a mortal blow. But I'd faced greenies too often before to underestimate their resilience. I swung the blade again, laterally this time, and took its head from its shoulders. The whole fight could have only lasted a second or two. As I turned away, my eyes were stabbed by the searing flash of the melter.
"Got him,"
Jürgen confirmed, as I tried to blink my retina clear of the dancing afterimages and cursed myself for my carelessness. That degree of disorientation could cost me my life down here.
"Look out!"
The breath was suddenly driven from my lungs as Margot dived forwards, catching me around the waist and barging me out of the way of a large and unfriendly rock which had become detached from the ceiling. It crashed to the ground where I'd been standing less than a second before.
"Thanks,"
I said, still trying to pick out the image of the red-headed trooper from the bright green haze which seemed to float between me and the rest of the world. I thought I could make out a grin and realized she'd switched illuminator on again.
"Anytime,"
she said.
"The whole roof's coming down,"
Griffin yelled, and I became aware of the creaks and rumblings which told me she was right. Apparently the explosion we'd touched off here earlier had left things even more unstable than we'd realised, something I suppose an old tunnel rat like me should have spotted if I hadn't been too busy being terrified of the Necrons.
"Back!"
I shouted, my childhood instincts kicking in at last. The worst of it sounded as if it was ahead of us. So we ran back to the shelter of the fresh amble tunnel and waited for the noise to stop.
"Emperor on Earth!"
Griffin said, when the dust had finally settled. I can't say I blamed her. Of the 9 troopers she'd set out with, only Margot was now left, and she must have felt the loss of so many of her subordinates keenly. Scintillating ice motes danced in our luminator beams as we took in the full import of the sight ahead of us. Where half the passageway had once been blocked, an impenetrable wall of debris now barred our way. Of the orcs and our fallen comrades, there was no sign at all.
"We're fracked, aren't we?"
Margot asked. I shook my head, afraid to speak. It looked to me as if she was right.
"I can try another shot," Jürgen suggested. "See if that might clear it."
More likely, it would bring down even more rubble and finish us off into the bargain. I shook my head again. Probably a bad idea, I said, surprised at my restraint under the circumstances. We could go back, Griffin suggested. Try to get to the refinery overland. Over a mountain range swarming with orcs in a blizzard. That would be suicide. And the dubious tone of her voice told me she realized that even as she spoke. We've got one chance, I said, my mind skittering reluctantly away from the thought even as I voiced it. I tried to picture the map of the Amble tunnels Logish had been compiling on his Auspex and overlaid the mental image with the fresh one we'd just discovered. With a lot of luck, it might intersect one of the others before too long and allow us to bypass the blockage ahead of us. On the other hand, it was also running more or less parallel with the passageway we'd seen trying to block off in the first place, and it seemed pretty obvious that the Necrons were already using it. If we went ahead, we'd almost certainly die. Well, almost certainly offers a bit more hope than definitely, which was what our other options amounted to. So in the end, it was the only choice to make. It was a grim and silent group which started out, already half the size we had been when we passed this way before, and with the gravest peril we had to face still in front of us. I averted my eyes from the mutilated orcs as we filed past their silent and frozen bodies, and wondered if I'd doomed us all.